Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Let's go back to 2011 with Squidge. Let's look at the World Cup again with Squidge.
Hello, and welcome to the Squidge Rugby World Cup Retrospective Podcast. It is actually today, as we're recording this, World Podcast Day. So there is a huge party going on around there. All of the podcasts are here. We're at the National Podcast Party. There's only six of us. But it's entirely white men chatting about shit.
Which is weird because there's only six of us, and usually I think there's about six men in the UK who don't have podcasts. So
I know, it's getting that way, isn't it?
Yeah.
So
very accurate.
Joining myself, Robbie Squidge, whoever you want to call me, and as ever, Mr.
Will Owen.
William Owen, thank you, is someone who has done another podcast in the past, as well as being a consistent hero on rugby Twitter.
Absolutely.
It is the one and only Sav of Linebreak Rugby. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm doing well. Yes. I think hero is a very strong word. I can't accept that at all.
I don't know. I mean, it doesn't take much to be a hero of rugby Twitter.
That's true. The bar is low. That is true, actually.
So you are safely sailing way over that bar. We're looking at like world record vaulting.
Either you're a hero or the other 90 people who run that account are heroes. I'm not really sure which yet.
It does get erratic sometimes. So I'll tweet something and then 2 minutes later, CC will tweet something and Fred might tweet some coaching thing. And I want to reply to them and it just doesn't work. It just doesn't work. So I have to then send them a DM or something. Yeah. It's a bit of a mess.
Just send yourself a DM on your own account.
Yeah.
Like, fuck off, Fred, or whatever.
Yeah, it's an erratic account to hold sometimes. It's fun. It's fun.
We are, of course, talking to you the week that Exeter made a European final. And yeah. Your tweets are always noticeable because they are the ones about Exeter.
Yes. That's true. And increasingly depressingly so, because the year that they've decided to turn heel, as it were, they've decided to start to try and win Europe. So I'm getting very mixed emotions in that respect, because I'm enjoying the rugby they play. Mm. It's just they can't stop saying things that I just inherently disagree with.
You're an enormous fan of drive overs from 1 yard out.
Yes, well, that's to be fair, that's a tactic that Baxter has brought through the championship. Yeah. And he hasn't changed. And I love it. It's great. It's just riveting stuff.
Mm. And it's easy to criticise, but it's so effective. And I find effective and good rugby more interesting than
it's
bad
easy
but
to
pretty
criticize?
Rugby.
They're winning games. They get to European finals.
It's easy to say it's not much fun, is it?
Yeah, you know, it's
not
to complain
much,
about.
You're on the bars. Yeah. It's easy to have a go at, I guess.
Exeter v the Barbars would be a very strange game, I think. It'd be similar maybe to Exeter Wasps, I'm not sure. But it would be a little bit of an odd one because one team is obviously trying to keep the ball forever and just drive for 1 yard and the other team's trying to throw it over their heads. So
similar to when you guys played Bristol the other week. And you had Semir and Drandra just thinking, yeah, I could just go around you guys. It's fine. It's easy. And the scorer shot out and you say, no. When we get the ball, we will score. It's fine.
Yeah, 100%. It's a confidence thing. I think Exeter just have the confidence that they have the ball. They'll have the ball forever, 80% possession or whatever, and they will eventually score. I mean, and it's hard. You can't buy that. I think lots of teams in the past have tried to buy that confidence, but you've got to make it, and they've managed to make it.
And you look at the weekend when Toulouse were ahead, you know, scored twice early on, and were playing all the rugby, looked the far better team, the team that were, you know, in control of the game after half an hour or so. And Rob Baxter was interviewed, and he just said, yeah, I feel confident in this game. We've got this. Like, this is, we're going to win this. You know, he didn't say we're going to win this, but he had that very much that vibe of, like, we haven't seen anything we can't handle.
I enjoy his... So he described the best way to tire opposition forwards out as making them constantly get up off the floor.
Yeah.
So he, like most people would say, oh, you run them from edge to edge, you make them, you know, but a good defensive system means that you don't actually run that much when you go edge to edge because defensive systems just slide. But making them actually tackle, get off the floor constantly, all that lactic acid they're producing, that's what tires big forwards up more than any sort of running.
Subconsciously as well, you know, you're thinking about it and you're thinking, God, I've had to make six tackles in the last 20 minutes.
People are more used to be involved at every ruck. At whatever speed, you know. The hardest, most draining part of defending is making a tackle, getting up, having to ruck, and then thinking about what you're doing next. That's the most difficult part, especially at that level.
Right.
Yeah, and that's when the gaps appear, etc. We should probably talk about the other... I've heard this is a Rugby World Cup problem.
Yeah, I was about to get onto that. So we should probably shuffle on to the game we're supposed to be talking about today. England against Romania. So this is actually a really famous match across the Rugby World Cup because it was, you know, I think England went in very confident. They had, of course, the previous week blown off a lot of steam by going dwarf tossing in the weekend between this and their previous game. And amazingly, they just weren't switched on. They were all hungover, and Romania won 44-12. I'm not going to lie; don't entirely know where I'm going with this. let's just play let's just play it like we watched a game from an alternate universe, in which England forgot to turn up. No, the game finished 67-3 to Romania. No, that was a genuine mistake. That one.
It's worth making it very clear: England did win this game. And hot take, guys, I think they deserved to win.
I think that's true.
And the main reason they deserve to win is Romania's lineout was one of the worst examples of a lineout I have ever seen in my entire life. It's like, it's not really a lineout. I don't know what you can call it. It's like a shambles of people kind of bumping into each other and then the ball just gets thrown towards
them. I was about to ask this question. So when somebody, for example, kicks the ball or runs and the ball goes over the touchline, it goes out of play, off the pitch, what happens?
Well, according to the Romanians, you throw it back to the other team.
Because nobody told them what a line-out is. And like, and Bogdan Suman, who we've referenced earlier in this podcast...
Your friend
like,
of mine.
Yeah, looked like he'd never thrown a ball in his life. And he got the ball to kind of like, what do I do now? And then just throws it in and hopes for the best. Hope that a Romanian might be somewhere in the vicinity of where he's throwing the ball. And I think they maybe caught one line out in the game, and that was when Marius Tinker was on.
There
was another one. There was one where it was such an awkward throw where they just went, had enough of this, we're just going to chuck it to the front. And for whatever reason, the lifters had their hands like around sort of the jumper's midriff. So they were barely lifting him. Like he got a few inches further off the ground than he would have. And he sort of fumbled the ball forwards. I think it's Tom Croft and the England team reaches across, sort of bats it back into him. And he would have knocked it on had it not been for Tom Croft knocking it back into him. And the referee just played on because he was like, this hasn't gone their way. Let's just give them something, you know.
There was a couple of moments the ref did that. And to be honest, even as an Englishman, I was kind of like, yeah, okay. Like, it's nothing's happening. Just let them have that pen. And, you know, it was quite nice. I made notes, as you guys maybe know, about the Georgia game, England-Georgia.
Yeah.
Where Haskell had an absolute shocker.
Yeah.
I then went and had made some more notes on the England-Romania game. And Haskell in the first 4 minutes gives away a penalty in an attacking position. And I just thought, oh, here we go again. I've got some more notes on Haskell. Like, and the commentary team later on in the game is like, oh, another great game from Haskell. And I'm looking at all my list of what I've got. And I'm just like, no, it hasn't. Like, he's been tackled for negative yardage so many times. He's given away the only penalties England gave away, is like three or four of them. And I think most of them involved Haskell in some way. It was just like, oh, God.
It says a lot about this England team that they won by literally 64 points and they still gave away about 10 penalties in the game.
Well, it was
incredible. The start of the game, you know, where they're just giving away penalty after penalty after penalty. Like, you look at the scoreline, you think that was a blowout the entire way. But the first 50 minutes, England just kept sabotaging themselves until the first Quato try.
If the remaining forward pack were competent, then genuinely I feel like they could have been in it till about the 50th minute, you know? And then England would have started running away from away with it, like the Georgia game.
England gave away 13 penalties. 13 penalties.
Way too many against a team that they would regard as... They wouldn't necessarily know who they're playing against. That's the kind of level of disrespect they would have.
Yeah.
And, you know, they shouldn't be giving away that many pens. It's mental.
To touch on the teams, because we kind of alluded to it there, this was a Romanian second 15, pretty much.
Yeah.
They had a handful. So Dumbrava was probably the first choice fly half, but he hadn't played the previous game. He came in. And, you know, you had a Christian Petra and Popolan. Well, Popolan was first choice in the following World Cup.
Yeah.
And there's a few, like, Florian Vlaeke was coming in at fullback. He was fullback.
First choice.
But Apostol was starting because, of course, their real first choice, Catalan Furku, pulled out because of his fear of flying.
Yeah,
that he couldn't
bring
himself to fly to New Zealand. So this is this is Romania's second 15. You know, their stand-up players in Maccabay, Tinku, etc. are all on the bench. Gal, who had a very good game in
there. There was 11 changes from
the
last
And that's the thing, like, you look at Marius Tinku and Mihai Maccabay are the two real leaders in that team, aren't they? Like, and then for some reason, Julian Dumitrash takes this as an opportunity. He's like, yeah, I'm the star player now. And for some reason, just from the first minute, just goes into full fuck it, I'll do it myself mode.
Yeah.
And everything, he tries like carrying the ball like he's Jamie Roberts. He tries booting it miles. He tries throwing crazy miss passes that aren't on. Like, he, for some reason, like, goes full Sergio Parise. And just because the two like main leaders aren't in the team to tell him not to.
Yeah. It's like he was led off the leash. Yeah.
Yeah.
To touch on Dumitrash, he is, we've talked about him before on this podcast, the Romania centre fullback fly half. He's playing 12 in this game.
Yep.
Who had genuinely maybe the biggest boot I've ever seen.
Yeah,
like
it's insane.
At one point, he takes a shot from his own half, right like on the touchline, and he only narrowly misses it. And it looks like he barely hits it. Like he kind of delicately strokes the ball. Like the way Greg Laidlaw...
It just about went under, didn't it? Yeah.
No, yeah. It had the distance. He just went wide.
Or was it wide? It was
just
wide.
Just wide, okay. Yeah. But his boot is incredible. Like his kickoff at the start of the game hangs in the air for about 12 seconds.
He missed touch once.
Mm.
I don't know why, how he missed touch, because like you said, he's got an absolute howitzer.
Well, this was it.
He missed touch once.
Romania were given a penalty on their own try line because I think it was James Haskell again, came in at the side.
Yeah.
And he went for goal.
Yeah, definitely was.
Yeah. And he weighed up going for goal. And he was trying to put it out just outside the English 22, and that's why he missed touch, because he aimed to make 80 metres off the kick.
Yeah, and I think England ran it back, and they probably ran it back with a bit of extra. But yeah, he was literally like so confident, I'm just going to stick it down in their half, basically. And I think everybody just went, that is optimistic. And this was a ball that people didn't really like as well. Like Johnny Wilkinson wasn't really enjoying this ball, and other kickers were having a little bit of a moan about it.
Yeah,
but he obviously felt it was just like a football, like a balloon that he could just pelt for miles.
I think you made the point before though, Robbie, that there's something about this England team. You made the point on the Georgia episode, didn't with Nick Heath, that there's something about this England team that clearly intimidate every team into thinking they can get shots at goal from anywhere.
Yeah.
And Romania, they also missed, what, 4 shots at goal in this game or something ridiculous like that? Even though they lost by 50 points.
They still,
So... Yeah, so England are... We'll come back to the England tries, the England scores. England are 34-0 up, right? And Romania then kick off, and it's Tulangi and Haskell both go up for the same high ball. They kind of take each other out.
Oh, yes.
And then Corbagiera blocks Romania making the tackle. So it's just like everyone is all over the place. It's like very much a visual metaphor for this England team. They fundamentally sort of... They catch the ball, but they get everything around it wrong.
Yeah.
If they did that in the quarterfinal, they get crucified.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, no one's in sync.
34-0 down. Romania have this penalty, you know, just next to the posts on the 22-metre line. And they decide, obviously, to go for goal.
Mm.
So Dumbrava then takes a shot. He nails it. And moments later, England give away another penalty, because obviously they do, you know, they haven't got anything else to be doing. They give away another penalty.
They're only 11 penalties away from taking the lead.
Exactly. They take England give away another penalty on the halfway line, or just behind the halfway line, on the Romanian half, on the touchline, and Romania
Petra's
kick
like,
it again.
I think we're in this, lads.
in this. Another three so, points to do it.
There's another point in the second half where them having missed that second shot and missed another shot towards the end of the first half, where they're given another penalty about 35 metres out, and Petra kind of really defeatistly just points and goes, yeah, obviously we're taking the shot. Come on. You know, you need to ask me. We're only 50 down.
We talked earlier, though, and it was because they were, I think, it's because they're so demoralised about their line-out. The scrum would have been a better option for them, because at certain points, the scrum was really hitting England hard. Like, the English front row were in trouble. And I think if they got a pen and just gone, yeah, we'll scrummage, because I think that'd have been a better option, because their line-out didn't exist.
No.
I think, quick taps. They didn't like a quick tap, though, to be honest with you, Romania. No. They were pretty tired. No.
They're getting held up all the time in the pack.
Calavitanu came on, took a quick tap, and really made a difference. I thought when he came on, the replacement just come off. Yeah, I thought he was very good when he came off the bench. But
one great
moment,
slim
pickings, I think,
with Calavitanu, when it was actually Ben Youngs took a quick tap. It might have been Wigglesworth by that point. Mm. And Calavitanu just comes in and absolutely nails Lewis Moody, nowhere near the ball.
Yes.
I think it was Youngs took the tap. I don't know. I'm not 100% sure, but I know Youngs took quite a good quick tap at one point and pushed the momentum a little bit. There was a lot of the English. So the first thing that Johnny Wilkinson does in a game, they get a penalty. It's Romania and like 40 meters out or something. And he goes for the post right at the beginning of the game. And they take 3 points. And I'm thinking to myself, it's Romania. Like, of all the teams, I get that you want a settler and all that, but of all the teams, just kick it to the corner and let's get the game going a bit. I felt that, and also he was booed quite a lot during that for that kick. The New Zealand fans were not a fan of him taking points against Romania, because it's all right, Romania take points against England, fine.
They were still booing Romania as well. Anyone opting for goal from a penalty was just getting booed to high heaven.
Were they all shouting for the Romanian lineup to take the line out?
That was the advice to the English box.
I think the idea of hell would be, I don't know if it's a comedy, but it would be watching that Romanian highlight from a coaching point of view. Like, how do you fix that? There's a lot to do, to be honest with you.
Do Romania have a forwards coach? Like, that they turn to and just like, dude, what the hell?
It was probably Marius Tinku, wasn't it?
True. He's probably doing it by himself.
At one point they cut up to the coach's box. And the Romanian coach had, after they just lost a line out in the England half, good attacking opportunity, blah, 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 blah. And he just kind of had this look on his face, that the same look we're talking about Rob Baxter having, of like quietly confident, like, we'll strike back from here. And he then picks up his walkie talkie. He says like 4 words into it, then puts it down, and just like a James Bond look at his assistant coach of like, we've got this, lads. Like,
The 70-minute plan is still on track.
Yeah. Unveils RoboCop in a Romanian top.
He's like, don't worry, lads. It's almost half time. This is a 60-point win, and they've only scored 34.
Well, England were quite... I mean, they obviously were protecting Johnny Wilkinson, but I think they took him off straight after the half-time whistle.
Yeah, he came off half-time. Yeah.
Wilkinson was basically just taken straight off. And I actually think, in a weird way, Flood almost played better, because he looked a little bit freer. They were just running around at that point, having a bit of fun. Whether that's because Romania were tired. So I decided, you know, it's easy to analyse England, because obviously they scored a lot. But defensively, Romania did something quite interesting. Is they were one of the few teams I saw that actually put loads of pressure on Ben Youngs.
Yes. I also noticed this.
Ben Youngs at the base, he loves picking and walking backwards a bit. But Romania, they had like players that were flying past the ruck, just pressurising him constantly.
Often wingers as well, sniffing to try and slap the ball out of Youngs' hand or whatever.
100%. The first two times it happens, and it is in the same passage of play, it's the scrum off, it's Soju, flying up on Youngs. And then after that, it's just the closest back. The closest back will shoot up from wherever they are, out, in. So it was often the winger, a couple of times to the centres. And it's clearly, it's tactical. You know, they're trying to pull Ben Youngs off.
They've chosen it, 100%. I wonder if they'd literally gone, I mean, I don't know the extent to the Romanian analysis, obviously, whether they'd gone in and go, Ben Youngs, he takes a step when he passes the ball, and we don't want it going further than the scrum half, particularly. So let's just attack him. And I think that was probably a tactic that other teams at the World Cup could have probably used against England, because they would have had a better structure maybe to implement it. So it was quite interesting.
Did look quite disjointed the way Romania were doing it. You know, it was a guy flying out of the defensive line and really trying to put pressure on him rather than it being part of a systematic thing. Though it did
wasn't
lead
a hurricane
to
Youngs blitz.
No, the Youngs froze, I think, 3 interception passes. There's one point when he picks the ball up and he kind of sees someone shooting him from one side. So he turns and looks the other way. And he's going, right, the touchline on that side is too far away. Touchline on that side is too far away. The closest thing is that really large, pale, bald Romanian man. I'll just throw it to him. So he just chucks the ball straight to one of the Romanian forwards. I think it's Lazar, takes the interception and has a little trundle. You know, you have a moment where he takes it, like, is he going to go all the way? But the Romanian coach thought, he's done it. He's in. You know, this is 7 points here.
My favourite one is himself. With about 10 minutes to go, Toby Flood throws an interception to Dan Brava, who's genuine. Yes. You can see a look on his face. He's hoping he doesn't catch the intercept because he does not want to run.
He is so tired, that man. Oh, my God. There was plenty of points where Romania were just going for the intercept rather than the tackle. And the English players, some of them realised. So Cueto, for his try, realised that was happening. Foden did a couple of dummies. But so, I think it was Tindall and maybe Moody. They didn't quite click. I don't know if it was kind of the older heads. They didn't realise they were allowed to dummy the ball. But they just kept throwing it. And like the Romanian guy would kind of try and catch it and it would bounce off his chest and stuff. But it was just like, there was a small divide between the older heads and the younger heads in the England team. And that was exemplified for me because Tindall crashed through at one point, tried to offload to Elangi, and they just were not on the same page. Like, he just flew over his head.
I think part of that difference between the younger heads and the older heads is just how long it took them to deal with a hangover.
That's cool. Yeah.
My favourite, of course, the intercepts as well, was there's another one with Ben Youngs at the end of the first half where he goes to the blind side. And Popolan goes genuinely for the intercept, not the deliberate knock-on. However, there's a moment where he realises that the ball's above his head and he is trying to catch the ball genuinely. And then he has a moment where he realises he's not going to and just fully commits and bats it as far away as possible.
He's just like, screw this, I'm not getting it. So
yeah, it's like the deliberate accidental knock-on.
Yeah.
You just come back to the thing you said about Tindall. So directly before he throws that mad offload to no one that just kind of bounced along the ground behind him, Phil Vickery on commentary, who, now I think we've mentioned Phil Vickery before, but I lovely, wonderful bloke, you know, Master clearly chef. Comes across. Yes, exactly. Phenomenal cook. But he has this vibe of a dad in a rugby club who at the last second someone goes, we need someone to do comms today, and he end up like, I've always kind of fancied this, you know, I always kind of wish I could have done this, and he gets 10 minutes in and realizes he's massively out of his depth and he's got nothing to say. So you know, that game against Argentina, when I've mentioned some previous episode, but when Ben Young scores, he just kind of pauses for a moment after Mullins asks him for his analysis and he just shouts, come on, England.
This is like perfect, let's get him back for the Romania game.
Yes, at one point during the you can always see him counting down the length of his contract until he never ever does it again. Chris Ashton takes the ball and he says, after Ashton's had a bit of a run, if anything he has been England's player in the previous two games.
He's been one of them.
He has certainly been one of their players.
There's one really funny moment with Phil Vickery where England have just given away a really stupid penalty on the Romanian try line. And there's a moment where it just clicks with Phil Vickery as he's mid-sentence that giving away penalties is a bad thing. And this England team might not be that good if they keep giving away penalties like that. And you kind of think, oh, you know what? I mean, we're playing pretty well, but penalties... Oh, wait. No, that's not good, is it?
Oh,
a similar note on the penalties. At one point, He says, you know, I would have liked Romania to kick for the corner, really try to put some pressure on England, but they value the 3 points. Like, they're 40 points down. But, you know, they value the 3 points.
I feel like they were just trying to pad their, they're padding their stats at that.
Just the...
Well, no,
the
I can't let this go. So I talked to Ed.
Okay.
Wallopy Joe on Reddit, and I'm not allowed to... He would kill me if I didn't bring it up. So... Basically, Ashton and Foden, I think this game was almost not their pinnacle, because when they played for Northampton, it was their pinnacle. But this game for them, they were just vibing so hard together.
Yeah.
They were just, you could see that they were perfectly in sync. They lived in each other's heads. And there was one where the ref actually ruined the vibe a bit and called it as a forward pass.
Yeah, that's never forward.
I was fuming. I was like, that was beautiful. We need more of that. And the ref blowing it up just, oh my God.
I have no idea which pass he was trying to say was forward either.
It was Foden, I think. I'm not 100% because none of them were forward. Yeah. I think it was Foden when he did the really quick switch left to right as fast as he could.
Because and turned his body to make sure it was backwards as well. 100%. Which I guess is maybe where he got it from. But like, that's the thing, like, it was such a nice move and all those passes were so clearly backwards. I mean, I'm obviously not English and I was fuming when he blew that up. So
just, well, we'll obviously talk about Man of the Match and Dick of the Day later and all of that. But like for me, Ashton was just on fire. Like Cueto scored a bunch of tries, but Ashton was just, he was the one that was like making breaks. And at one point, the first try, I think it was when Cueto scored, Ashton was just like, I'm bored of us being rubbish. I'm just going to run. Like, I'm just going to switch it on a bit. And then Cueto was just happily doing his nice support line and scored a good try.
Yeah. I have that down in my notes as Ashton does a run so good, Cueto scores.
Yes, exactly. It was, and there was one point on the commentary when it was like, this is no longer England v Romania, it's Ashton v Cueto. And I was like, Ashton should be winning that match because he's actually, I feel like he's doing more.
Yeah, whereas Cueto was just kind of popping up on the end of things because they happened to pass in that direction.
Making it for lost time, whereas, don't get me wrong.
Yes.
Well, he needed it. I actually put in my notes, one of his tries was reminiscent of 2007. It wasn't really, but I put it in the notes because I just felt like they did
what
a small...
What do you mean, he scored it?
Yeah, but they did a small TMO check and I was like, oh my God, flashbacks.
Yeah, that was the previous World Cup match he'd played, Mark Cueto. Then comes in and actually scores 3 times. So
it's not quite the trade-off he was hoping for, is it? It's not like the CMO gave it and he was like, finally!
So, interesting stat. Previous match, before this, we had the quickest ever Rugby World Cup hat-trick. 7 minutes, Adam Ashley Cooper, first try to last.
Okay.
Here, we had the second quickest, 9 minutes, Mark Cueto, first try to last.
Okay, that's a pretty tidy piece of stats.
Yeah.
You and
really,
Alex Lowe does the stats quite a lot on the
yes.
Twitter. Yeah, yeah. You and him going toe-to-toe there with that.
Let's
one.
Let's get, yeah, Russ Petty involved, you know. He can join in.
Yeah.
Yeah. Get all of us in. Yeah, so should we start on the first Cueto try?
Yeah, sure.
Because it's... actually, you probably talked about it a bit, but the three to Cueto tries, I guess, they're all well taken, nice, good rugby tries.
It's a bit, to be honest with you, as an England fan watching back, it's a bit reliant on individual brilliance. Each one.
Yeah.
There is one try later on which we'll get to, which is a really nice backline move. But the first try was kind of, I felt, was just like England had been a bit rubbish, like penalties and loads of and they'd taken 3 points and things like that. And then Ashton got bored, as I said, and just was like, I'm gonna run really, really fast past someone and then score a try, which isn't the way an England team necessarily should win games, but obviously it's Romania, so they can get away with it a little bit.
There's something of that about them, you know. There's a very particular kind of confidence about this England team that it's not, and it starts about from the second Cueto try, you know, when they've scored 2 tries in quite quick succession, having only needed 15 minutes of being rubbish to kind of break Romania down and realise they're not great.
Yeah.
So from that point, it's not like the way we've seen England under Eddie Jones play, or the way the All Blacks play when they play Tier 2 nations, or, you know, South Africa to have in this 2011 World Cup and so on, where they're kind of just like, no, we're better than you. Like, we're just gonna do this. We're going to go about our business. England look like they can't believe how good they are. there's this like we've been in, like, and I'm sure, I don't know if you've had the same thing, Charlie, but where you've been in, like, touch tournaments and so on, where you've had a player who plays, like, first-team senior rugby playing against, like, five-year-olds and stepping them and being like, I can't believe how great, look at that, look what great step that was. It's like, mate, he's five. It's it's the remaining second team. Like, come on. Wind your necks in.
There was very much that vibe from Foden in this game, I thought.
Oh, yeah.
Particularly when he scores his try, and obviously Tuilagi does a lot of really nice work for him and then gives him a really lovely pass. And, like, there was a couple of times in this game where I looked at Tuilagi and thought, he's a shadow of the player he is these days. But, like, that was a really lovely break and pass, and then Foden rounds it really nicely. But he, like, you can tell as he puts the ball down, he's thinking, oh, I am a class.
There's a swagger. He moves with the guy who's dating a pop star swagger.
Yeah, exactly.
That's it. So he then puts the ball down. He puts the ball down and he immediately goes and does the cradling the baby in the cot celebration for any of the eight women in Northampton he's got pregnant at that time.
Of course. Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't know if Ben Foden is going to be listening to this, but yeah, he really messed up. He definitely messed up a lot of lives with his indiscretions, shall we say.
I was in a bar in Japan last year. And someone told me quite a few stories about someone who lives in Northampton, had been to Northampton Uni, and has had quite a few stories about Ben Foden that I can't possibly repeat.
Yeah, we'll lie. But... yeah, we'll have to get the lawyers.
Absolutely.
Yeah, all 18 of them.
Yeah, none of them involve Carly Rae Jepsen, though. He didn't reach other pop stars beyond Healy.
Has he been to Canada?
Probably. He seems like the kind of lad that would go to Canada.
He's probably
been
to Canada.
No, he doesn't, does he? He's played Toronto Arrows, hasn't he?
There we go.
New York.
Yeah.
So rugby. This is a scandal that Ben Foden and Carly Rae Jepsen has happened. It's canon now.
We've uncovered it. very worrying stuff. Anyway, yeah, he had the swagger of someone who was dating a pop star or married to a pop star.
Yeah, whether it was Carly Rae or not.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, that was the first try. That was quite a nice finish. But that was Kwaito's first try, actually. Nothing to do with Ben Foden. I don't think he was even involved, was he, in the first try?
We picked up on the Foden try. We'll just go in any order, you know.
Yeah. Chaotic, yeah.
Yeah. So Kwaito scores three. You know, they're quite nice. He takes them well. Ashton also scores three. He spreads them out a bit more. You know, they're not over the course of 9 minutes.
Think at that 9 minute, yeah.
Yeah. He probably was aiming for it. His first try, so it's quite a nice set backline move. I think England actually gets slightly wrong, and the pass is given at the wrong time, but Ashton is so good that he adapts and works with it and finishes it anyway.
Actually agree.
The part of it is made by, there's this kind of miss ball that misses Johnny Wilkinson and goes into one of the forwards who kind of carries, crashes, you know, passes it on. And Wilkinson properly sells it. You know, he's got his hands up, he's screaming for the ball, hands, you know, as he'd catch it, and all the remains are lugging him because he's literally Johnny Wilkinson.
I think he's one of the best in the world at doing that. Despite him being the best in the world at catching a ball, he might also be the best in the world at not catching the ball.
Yeah.
He's also really handsome, so all the remainies are looking at him.
It is easy to look at, isn't he?
They're going, it's the bloke from the cover of Rugby 04. Wow!
And a bloke that's managed to not have a bad political opinion because he just doesn't give them.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. But I can just imagine, as Wilkinson's selling that, you only see that on the pitch. You know, you see the 2 seconds in which he's doing this, just holding his hands up. What you don't see is him going out at 5 a.m. and practicing putting his hands up, pretending to catch a ball that isn't there, selling it in his bedroom mirror every single night, over and over again, until he gets it perfect. And I can just imagine them running it in an England training session and him pulling whoever the attack coach was at the side. Is it Matt Catt at the time? I don't know. Whoever it was at the time. No, he was the following World Cup. Whatever. Pulling the attack coach and all the coaches.
I'm not sure if they'd had an attack coach.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't know if coaches have devolved into that technicality yet.
Yeah.
And you're just saying to him, look, I think what would really help is if I hold my hands up like this, And they keep running the move, and they keep getting the move perfect in terms of timing and everything else on the passes. But he's like, I wasn't selling it properly. You know, my hands were on my waist. You know, I didn't have the right look on my face. I accidentally shouted mum rather than ball, ball, ball.
Ashton's finish on this try. Mm. So he slides onto his back, doesn't put the ball down, gets up, runs under the post to put it down. And the whole time he's thinking so hard about whether or not to do an Ash Splash. And you can just see the cogs working in his brain thinking, do we do it now or do we see if we get one later in the game? Obviously he gets his second try where he does do it because he has plenty of time to run it in. But it's so funny because he wasn't running it under the post to get the conversion. He was thinking, can I just run a bit faster so I could properly dive for
get
this?
Get a decent air on it. Yeah.
A good shot for tomorrow's papers.
That's it. He wants to be the cover of the papers.
Of course. Because he was trying to outperform Cueto and get in the team.
Exactly. Yeah. Sure. Exactly, yeah. So he knew he needed the third, and he knew he had to get a good photo. It's like the story...
He was very up for that game. Go on.
Yeah. The story Akihito Yamada tells about his try against Samoa in the World Cup is his mate said to him, what you should do if you score a try during the World Cup is you should dive because it's really catchy and you get on the cover of the paper. And so he goes to dive for that try early. And he said he wouldn't have scored it because he would have tried to just dot it down if his mate hadn't said to him, you've got the cover of the papers. So he beats Alexander Tuolangi and scores in the corner because he was trying to go for glory. Yeah,
that is a heartwarming story.
Truly inspirational.
I think it was Tom Croft with the really good sleight of hand in that backline move with Ashton. Coming through, I think. Yes. I'm not 100%.
Yeah, Croft had a really good game, actually. Not only that, I mean, it's like he had like a bucket list in this game. Like, he scored a try, he got an assist, he kicked the ball out for half time.
Yes, he did. Oh, that was funny as well. Because
Singapore.
They had that breakaway at like right at the death because they missed the penalty. And I feel like he could have just kept running and instead he was like, oh, I'll kick it out. But he like gave it some welly. He didn't just like run to the edge and tap it. He was like, I'm going to give this.
He was so determined to do it. Like, he stepped somebody, fended off another guy. I was like, I'm not passing. Nobody else is kicking this out. I'm going to kick this ball out if it kills me. I'm a forward. I never get to do this. We're 30 points up. Today is the day.
Do you remember Lachlan Boshier doing that in Super Rugby, Aotearoa, early this year? Where he's given the ball in his own 22 to carry, you know, he's like running onto it off a line out to carry first up and whatever, they'll do whatever. And he's beginning to charge. He looks up, sees the defence coming at him, and he puts the brakes on, turns around and boots it out.
I'll go find that clip because that sounds like a crisis of confidence almost. Like, no, I'll get
it. It's almost shithousery. It's almost just like, I'm not doing that.
Yeah,
well, I'm getting to the warm changing room.
He's not a player who'd have a crisis of confidence, to be honest.
No.
But yeah.
No, he is playing for the Chiefs.
It's shithousery against your own scrum half, isn't it? Yes. Like, no, I'm going to be the one to kick this out this time. You don't get the satisfaction.
Yeah, I'm the master of this play, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Look at me. I am the scrum half now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Speaking of scrum off, should we talk about Ben Youngs's try?
Sure.
So the very first act of the second half, England kind of accidentally form a maul from the kickoff, and Ben Youngs just kind of sees the blind side and goes, oh, yeah, we'll have a bit of a crack, you know.
Yeah.
And he's not expecting it to go quite as well as it does, because the Romanian player doesn't really attempt to tackle him. And he manages to get the ball away to Manu Tuolangi, who feeds it back to him to score. It's effectively what happens. But there's no way, like, Youngs was probably thinking, like, oh, I'll get a positive carry and maybe an offload to Tuolangi, rather than thinking, like, no one touched him.
He's looking to draw his man and put Tuolangi in for a bit of a big carry, you know.
Yeah.
And then he accidentally makes a clean break.
Yeah.
And he's able to draw his man. Tuolangi gives it back to him, and Young scores. as you say, seconds into the half. Like, yeah. Nick Mullins mentions everyone's coming back with their pies still.
Yeah. And it's the kind of break, he didn't expect to make it, but it's the kind of break DuPont makes against really good opposition.
Yeah.
Like, that's the move. He's running back blind and actually escaping. Whereas Youngs does make breaks like that, but it felt like, he didn't expect to actually make that. And then he had to run the full 80 metres or whatever, the 60 metres all the way. And I think the French did actually score a try similarly to that.
Yeah, there's the Charles Olivon one in the Six Nations against England. Yeah, it was very similar. Yeah.
And this is absolute peak form Ben Youngs. You know, this is, this is, I think, the best he's ever played, really. And he
wasted in
the
2011
good.
England team.
God, I know. But he's playing with such pace and accuracy, which, you know, he tends to play with one of those, if at best, since.
He accurately hits the touchline quite often.
Hey!
Speaking of, there's a moment, and again, not to give away too much about a Dick of the Day nomination, but Ionel Kazan, who is playing outside centre for Romania, at one point in the early first half, does his best Ben Youngs impression. So we're 8 minutes into the game, Romania's first or second real attack of the game. You know, they've got decent numbers over, and Kazan has two men outside him. He's about 20 yards from the touchline and thinks, okay, this is fine. I can just give a simple pass and let Vlaiko outside me do the rest of the work, fix a man for a two-on-one or something of the sort, you know, at least a two-on-two. And instead, he just fires the ball both over people's heads and about 6 yards behind them and just goes straight into touch. And Nick Mullins on the commentary says he's been doing that in the warm-up the whole time. He's been firing loads of passes. He's been having an absolute nightmare. And most of them have gone into touch. Ood is an international outside centre. Was he taking passing lessons from Bogdan Suman?
Oh, honestly, if you're doing that pre-game and it's constantly just hitting nobody, you don't
just
do it.
Throw the dummy, like, man. Yeah, just cut inside.
It reminds me of the one game. So I can usually play fly half. The one game we ran out of nines. Everyone was injured. I had to go in at nine.
Oh, boy.
The previous day, I'd been told, "Look, our nines are like a little bit injured. They might have to come off." So I practiced box kicking all day. I was like, I don't know how to box kick. I practiced. So the problem was is that I went in and played nine, and all I had in my head is, I've practiced my box kicking. Let's box kick. So I just box kicked. And like, everybody's like, what are you doing? Like, that's not, we haven't done any training for box kicking. And it's like, he obviously had it in his head. I can throw that miss pass. It's a really good miss pass. I love it. But he's obviously no good at it. And he just can't actually do it.
Did you ever get the chance to do that thing when the ball like squirts out the ruck and you manage to like toe poke it to one of your forwards running onto the ball? Did you ever get the chance to do that?
Because
I've done that once in my career and I felt phenomenal. I felt like Ben Foden crossing for that try. Like, it was a complete fluke, but...
How many pop stars in Northampton do you have pregnant?
As far as I know, zero.
Wow. They're coming out of the woodwork now. I think I managed one where I picked it up with one hand out of the ruck and put it in the other one and kind of pushed it towards someone because it was just such a mess in there. So I managed some sort of one-handed ball transfer, which I thought was a miracle.
That's a good move to pull off to make it look like a good nine, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Did you ever manage to get into any fights to gain the forward respect?
A little bit. Well, I got a yellow card, which is my only yellow card in existence has come when they put me in at nine. I felt like I really lent into. Well, sadly, it wasn't really a yappy nine. Well, maybe it was a yappy nine situation. Basically, I accidentally, when retreating into the defensive line, slaps the ref on the stomach. So I was trying to set the line and I kind of walked back and I just saw another. So when I was playing this game, I was in yellow and blue hoops and he was wearing a bright yellow top. And I thought the forward was just not in the defensive line. So I just fully slapped him in the stomach.
And like
a little bit later, I made a tackle where it wasn't really high. Like I caught the ball pretty well. And he was like, yeah, that's a high. Like it was literally a split second. I think after I'd slapped him, I then made the tackle and I just got the yellow card immediately. Like I was just gone.
The thing is, right, that's very unfortunate because if the referee called you over, said like, turn around, what's your number? And saw the number 10, he'd have known, okay, he didn't mean to slap me.
Yeah.
Whereas he saw 9 and thought, okay, you're going in the bin.
Yeah, yeah. You've got to go. It was, I think it's the, that's the only card I've ever received. And it was, yeah, 9 on my back. And I've literally assaulted the ref to a certain extent. absolutely, yeah, just a horrendous move on my part. Didn't even know it was happening. But to be fair, it was quite a soft, you know, he's quite a soft belly. And I mean, I was quite distraught.
You heard you saying that as well.
Yeah, I was quite distraught that he was so far out of line. I was trying to, you know, get him back in.
He didn't go full Victor Koliashvili and just shove him over.
No.
My worst offence is I once told a referee to stick to the day job, but I made sure to do it after the final whistle. It was because of an incident 5 minutes into the game where I passed the ball. Again, I was playing nine, and one of the opposition forwards was retreating onside and it just happened to bump into him. And the referee, right, gave a scrum to the opposition claiming that I'd thrown it at him deliberately. It's like, he came from behind me. How the hell was I supposed to know he was there? And that's not a law. And obviously,
it's just you can...
a bit of an argument with him there, but eventually he actually shut me up. So I thought, right, okay, I'm going to save my comments the final whistle unless we win. We lost. They were bottom of the table. They battered us. It was all the referee's fault.
Of course. How would you describe the Boxing Day game I played in a couple of years ago?
I think it was entirely fair.
So basically, it was like almost like a charity once a year event.
Yeah,
thing,
we
you know?
Play. Our club plays under. It's usually under 30s versus over 30s. Over 30s being mainly a load of people coming out of retirement for their one game a year. It's a traditional thing in memorial of an ex player of ours.
So
I was asked to play in that. You know, it was like after the channel had started and so on, and I've been playing touch, you know, at the club, and so I was on the bench for this thing, and
big
I came
name on,
on
campus. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. I came on at half time, having not played a game of senior, having never played senior rugby. You know, having not played rugby since I was 17.
First ever game at fly half as well.
Exactly. Yeah. I came
the
on
creative
at 10.
Mind came in. I get it.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So they brought me on at 10 with
I was playing
PC
nine,
at
yeah.
9.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. Yeah.
I know. Yeah. My first touch, so I come on and the over 30 is like 30 points behind. And the referee is like, what is he, like 60, 70?
He's in his 70s, yeah.
He's in his 70s, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And he's never going to stop reffing. He's
mobile?
A legend.
Is he mobile?
Yeah, just about.
Okay.
As mobile as you can feasibly be at 70.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, in a muddy field, yeah.
Sure. Exactly, yeah. So I take my first touch at 10. You know, I'm kind of stood in. I'm just going to ship it along, you know, standard position. When suddenly one of the forwards comes from behind me and flattens me. Just like dives on my back.
He was genuinely about 20 yards offside. And the referee just goes, yeah, play on. Like that, because it tends to get to the point where the over 30s will... The 50-50 decisions will go their way, let's say.
Yeah,
in
the 60-40 decisions will go their way.
Sure. Yeah. The 90-10 decisions... The 100% decisions will go their way.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
My second...
It sounds like someone's trying to hit you, to be honest.
It felt that way. My second touch was like... It was a miss pass to a winger who ran 70 metres and scored. It was entirely that winger. Like, he did absolutely everything.
But
I count it as an assist. Exactly.
Creative genius. Did he just run? Was there anyone in front of him? Because you put him in space.
No, he beat his man, went on the outside, and then beat the fullback himself as well.
Assist,
you know,
assist.
It was like, he did everything. It was like Ashton in this game that we're supposed to be talking about. We don't have to come back to it. It's, you know.
Well, I've got... Do you want some stats? I've got some stats.
Please, give us statistics.
Romania have the heavier pack in this game, which you do actually notice perhaps in the scrum every so often. Because England do start going backwards in the scrum every so often, and Haskell tries to pick. And I will say the sign of a good eight is in a backwards going scrum, you end up going forwards. That very good eight, obviously. And Haskell would try and regard himself as being a very good eight. Actually, Haskell didn't manage to do that. He did manage to continue going backwards.
Longest Delario, just before this World Cup, said Haskell could be the best number eight in the world if he gets a run of games in that position. How do you feel about that?
Cool. If I was Lawrence Delalio, I would stop commentating and say things such as that.
Hey, he's got to pay for all of that money he's spending in brothels on items we don't know what he's spending it on. All we know is he's spending 30 grand in a brothel. Could all be on drinks. Could all be Andre.
Yeah, he's buying a lot of expensive champagne.
There's a joke here about how inept the Romanian hooker was in this game.
It's
because it is, of course, a Romanian establishment he frequents, which I'm surprised, considering the remarks he gave about the Canadians love ice hockey. That's why they're good forwards. He didn't go, well, yeah, I know the Romanian hooker's going to be good. I know.
There we go. The joke came out. It was there. And as always, Robbie manages to pull it out. unlike Ben Foden. I've also got a note here that says Steve Thompson is good at rugby. I don't actually know. I don't have any notes on timings around that, but I've written Steve Thompson is good at rugby. So I'm imagining he might have done some interesting things.
Oh, I think he set up one of Ashton's tries.
Yeah,
right?
It's Ashton's second try. England run quite a nice move and they get it out to Paceman on the wing in Steve Thompson, who then looks up, sees how far he has to run and just goes, "You do it, Chris. You take this one. I'll get the next one. Don't worry about it."
that must have been it then. So yeah, Steve Thompson's good at rugby. I just feel like Phil Vickery is doing the commentary and Steve Thompson is still on the pitch. You know, there's vibes going on there, which is quite impressive.
Other thing Steve Thompson does is at one point Romania kick the ball out and Thompson is stood there ready to take the quick throw. And he tries to take it, but there's one of the Romanian players who stood kind of on the England side of it, you know, blocking the quick throw. And he turns to the touch judge and says, "He's blocking the throw." And the touch judge is like, "So?" So he goes to the referee and he says, "I want to take the quick one. He's not letting me." And the referee just kind of doesn't acknowledge him and just moves on. He's like, "We're having a line out. You're going to have to throw it in a second." And he goes to the referee again and continues complaining to him, not realizing that isn't a rule. He's perfectly entitled to do that.
He can stand there if he wants, yeah.
Yeah.
That's a really weird, like, he shouldn't be allowed to stop me taking it, despite the fact that part of the rule is, if you are standing there, you're making the line out and whatever and preventing the quick throw. That's part of the job.
Yeah. That's what you see wingers do it all game, every game, running up to stop a quick throw.
Yeah.
Racing up. He's never noticed
90% of a wingers' job.
He's too quick. He's always run straight past that.
I like that. The scrum half just claiming that the winger's job is basically blocking quick line out and maybe just touching the ball down in the corners, the other 10%. I'd agree.
This is, of course, Steve Thompson, a couple of months earlier, had taken that intercept in Dublin and ran it in from 50 metres.
Of course.
Yes. He was probably still tired, though.
Yes, he's still recovering from that.
Yeah. Well, I remember watching him in the Legends game. I think he did something similar. He basically ran the length of the pitch.
Yeah, he stepped Andrew Walker. Yeah. Yeah, and got the oxygen on. Yeah.
Oh, yes, the oxygen. That was hilarious.
Yeah.
Legend. We love Steve Thompson.
Yeah.
I can't remember if I've told this story on the podcast before, but the day after Steve Thompson took that intercept in Ireland, I was playing. I've gone through like both of my playing anecdotes here.
Yeah.
I was playing a game and I came off the bench at halftime again. That was kind of my thing, you know. I was like Toby Flood. I came on at halftime.
Okay.
I came on at halftime and we were like 7-0 was the scoreline.
Did you run into the post?
When I came on. Yes. Yeah. It might have been 5-0. No, it was 5-0. It was 5-0. It was like a really dull game to be watching. And I came on, opposition, you know, like in our half, had a really threatening series of attacks. I came in, took an interception, you know, and I didn't get anywhere. Like I took the intercept. It's sort of more a turnover than a chance.
That's quite solid.
Yeah, two people said to me afterwards, "Steve Thompson moment."
they knew the reference and just thought, I'll throw it out there as an intercept. Steve Thompson.
Forever. Every time I take an intercept since, I think of Steve.
You're dedicated, you know, to Steve Thompson.
Yeah, he is my inspiration.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
Always in my heart, in my mind, Steve Thompson.
So I've got one of my last notes about England attacking. Is they performed at one point something that they probably stole from Super Rugby back in 2004, 2005, which was the flat crossfield kick. Johnny Wilkinson to Ashton and Foden.
Yeah.
And they just suddenly ran down the left.
Of course.
And the commentary seemed absolutely shocked by it. You know, they were just like, oh my God, they must have practiced that in training. You know, and obviously nowadays that's like just a normal move. But in 2011, I imagine that was blowing minds, apparently. But New Zealand have been doing it for years and everything.
Yeah.
and doing it not on the opposition line as well, you know, doing it in their own half.
Yes, not where they were, and not again, and against, not to disrespect to Romania, but doing it at top level, you know, games we're talking though.
Yeah.
There's one moment towards the end with about a minute or two left when Romania have the knock-on advantage and Dumitrash does this lovely chip over and then just doesn't bother catching it.
Because
it lands in his hands. And my note says, Dumitrash sexy chip, Dumitrash less sexy knock-on.
So he sees the ball coming into his hand. He sees he's timed it right to regather it. Then he looks and sees it's Dejan Armitage flying into into him. And it's Tuilagi. It is Tuilagi. Yeah. Right. He sees Tuilagi coming at him. And he kind of thinks,
right, okay.
I don't want a bit of that.
He begins to brace himself for impact, then realizes he hasn't caught the ball.
Tuilagi, I think I agree with Will earlier when he said Tuilagi wasn't he's a shadow of his future self. But there were flashes of Tuilagi where he ran in a way where it looked, you know, you could see the movements that he makes later on in his career. That he kind of gets half tackled and actually goes down, whereas later on in his career, that half tackle wouldn't even phase him.
Yeah.
So you can see flashes of the Tuilagi coming through, and like you can just imagine. And that moment that's happened for Tuilagi recently, did you see? I don't particularly like the account, but the Rugby Inside Line account.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
They tweeted. Aware of its existence. Tweeted apparently that. Your best friend, Steve Diamond, was talking about Tuilagi usually only gets 9 games a season, and this was his 9th game for Sale. And Tuilagi, in a couple of seconds, he's limped off injured after that game. So that is the 9 games that he's had for Sale that season.
Wow.
So he's like, he's apparently average, he's averaged 9 games a season for Leicester.
Wow. To say the amount they were paying him, you know, he was, what, the second highest paid player in the Premiership? Second or third? You know, he's right up there.
Huge. And, you know, and that's obviously been, it's going to continue for Sale, apparently, because he's had his 9 games and sadly he's limped off injured. But it's just like, you can see the potential in that 2011 Tuilagi.
Yeah.
And it's just, I don't know, I'm still hopeful for him. You know, I'm watching that Tuilagi and I'm like, you've got so much ahead of you and it's going to be absolutely brilliant.
He's also, though, he's averaging 3 times the games per season that Benteo did for Worcester.
Which, I feel like the RFU, Teo and Sam Burgess, the RFU pop-up for that or the, you know, provision for that should have been massive. Because really, they were just buying them for England. That was the reality, wasn't it?
Yeah. Exactly.
They were paying an England wage.
Speaking of centres that can't pass off the left hand, Mike Tindall.
Sure.
So I've got 2 notes on Mike Tindall. One is, in the last minute, there's this crazy passage of play in which Romania kind of intercept the ball and they've got a clear run down. They can't make it. You know, obviously they kick it, they try and chase back, blah, 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 blah. Tindall hairs it back, in fairness, dives on the ball 5 metres out from the line.
Of course.
There's then a long passage of play where Toby Flood goes into complete don't know what happens. It's he becomes like Dan Carter in 2005. Yeah. He's throwing dummies. He's stepping everyone. He's just phasing in and out all around the pitch, looking for the post to run into. Can't find it. Just beating another Romanian. Eventually the post will turn up. And he's really going for it. He then gets the ball again, having passed it on. I think it's to Tuilagi or whoever's in his ball.
Armitage.
Thank you. They then recycle it back into Flood, who throws this like 40-meter mispass along the wing.
Yeah.
And like Flood is absolutely on one at this point. So I think it's Croft who kind of has to regather, and he spins and he sees coming herring down the pitch, finally joining back in, is the one and only World Cup winner, 38th in line to the throne, Michael Tindall. And he sees Tindall hairing it, and he's like, it's a back, you know. I thought it was Dan Cole initially, but it's Mike Tindall. And so he pops it up to Tindall, who sprints onto the ball perfectly. He's had literally a 40-50 metre run-up, and he's going at absolutely top pace. And it is like watching a post box shuffle down a hill. Like, It is the slow. It's like watching Mike Tindall run. He looks like he's buffering. Like he looks like he hasn't loaded properly. And he's kind of stopping in between and jagging his way across the pitch as he runs in a straight line. And he has like clear space to run into. And he somehow managed to eat it all up and only make about 10 yards. When anyone, like I would have finished that. Like Penguins would have finished that. But Mike Tindall barely makes it to the 22.
Coming all that way for a positive carry.
Yes.
Well, Tindall wasn't there for the rugby. Tindall was there for the dwarves. That's why.
That's canon.
The other thing I have on Mike Tindall, so I know we've talked a bit about on this podcast, it was the era of being able to get away with having a centre who couldn't pass.
Yeah.
In a way, you couldn't have 5 years prior to this. You couldn't 5 years after this. But for some reason, in 2011, like 2009 to 2012 maybe, you could get away with having a centre who could maybe offload but not pass.
Yeah.
So at one point, just to nail this point home, our friend Phil Vickery says, "I question why Tindall needs to pass so often. Just tuck it up, then recycle it to Wilkinson."
Oh God,
he's not got this sussed, has he?
There's something Clive Woodward about that. Like he's listened too much to him or something.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's stuck in your head, Phil. You need to learn something new. Because
he's been having conversations with England's attack coach, if he exists. Yeah.
He's actually just been talking to himself in the shower. But
yeah.
that is a bad point. But I will agree with you. Like, it's the kind of time when Haskell should have been pinnacle because he was just big. Like, it's just big people. It's, you know, South Africa were, they, I mean, there was skill there, don't get me wrong, but they were still in the mindset of being big.
Yeah.
That kind of stuff. I was listening to one of your other, one of your previous pods of the South Africa smashing Namibia game.
The
Lion Tamer. Yeah. So that blew my mind. I wanted to talk about the Lion Tamer. That was amazing. I was listening to that thing to myself. Who's the hardest man in England that could deal with a lion, like an actual lion? And I think I came down to Lewis Moody, like just because he's a little bit like, there's something loose.
Yeah.
And so he could probably deal with a lion.
He wouldn't think twice about fighting the lion. Exactly. No matter how hard he is. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Watching this World Cup, just on Lewis Moody, from the way he played, I seem to remember him being the kind of open side who knew all the laws inside out and was so accurate and just like encyclopedic rugby knowledge.
He did play under Martin Johnson, though.
But yeah, watching him in this World Cup, you're kind of going, he didn't know what the laws were. He just loved flinging himself into people. Like he's like Tom Cruise. He's just this, like, he loves trying to kill himself, but not quite doing it.
Speaking of Tom Cruise, I just finished watching Edge of Tomorrow yesterday for no apparent reason.
That's a great film.
Great. Just a rewatch for no reason whatsoever. Mimics and alphas and omegas. Yeah, it was amazing.
It's fantastic.
It's taken us an hour to move on to films this week.
I know. We haven't got there yet. Edge of Tomorrow is terrific, or Live, Die, Repeat, or Live, All Die, You Repeat. Need to Kill, or whatever you want to call it. Yeah.
Well, on my perfectly legal streaming site, it was called Edge of Tomorrow.
Yeah.
And like I said, Tom Cruise, obviously Scientologist, cult leader, phenomenon.
Yes, hooker.
Hopefully he doesn't listen.
If Tom Cruise listens, hire me. Or just say hi. Like, whatever. I love Tom Cruise, unapologetically.
If Tom Cruise is listening and he wants to feature on one of our next episodes, then please do get in touch.
He's invited.
Yeah, no. If he wants to give us in return for the privilege of coming on this podcast or cameos in one of his next films, then that would also be accepted.
Mate, amazing. Like, I've said this before, like, normally my favourite film of the year is, like, you know, like, the year before, it was, like, a 3-hour German art film. But, like, this year, my favourite film of the year is Portrait of a Lady on Fire, which is, like, 2 hours of two French women alone on an island, not talking to each other, pretending they don't fancy each other. It's phenomenal. I love it. It made me cry so much. It's great.
Sounds like a psychological thriller.
It's so good. But my favourite film of 2018 was Mission Impossible Fallout, because I just thought it was the best action film I've seen in years. It's so good.
I'm going to surprise... I haven't watched it. So I'm going to have to obviously watch it so I can give you feedback.
Yes. I, of course, came out of seeing that film turned my phone back on, had 200 plus Twitter notifications because Sam Warburton had just tweeted to me.
Oh, of course. That was the time.
I remember now.
Yeah. And I'd managed to sum up all of those notifications in one text to you.
It just said, Sam liked your tweet. Liked your video. Yeah.
Which is the best thing to come. That might have a bearing on why it's your favorite movie. I don't want to tell you that you've been psychologically programmed to enjoy that movie more because of that, but you may have been psychologically programmed to enjoy that movie more because of that.
It was a hell of an evening, I'm going to tell you that much. Yeah. I remember I'd had my I put the video up on Sam Warburton that morning. I then had a nightmare because the trains weren't running. I was having to get a bus instead to get a haircut. And I didn't think I was going to be there in time. I was having to ring the hairdresser and say, like, oh, I'm going to be there late. Because I thought it was going to be like a really easy stop off on the way to the cinema. It wasn't. And it ended up being like a whole ordeal. It was a really stressful morning. And then Sam Warburton liked my tweet. And I got to watch Tom Cruise like fall off a helicopter.
Nice.
And all the fears fell away.
Yeah. Yes. He is, of course, to go on completely pointless news, he is, of course, re-teaming with Doug Liman, the director of Edge of Tomorrow, next year to make a film that they're going to shoot in space.
Oh, wow. So he's going after the Matt Damon market.
Yes, yeah.
That's where, yeah. Okay.
But he's, like, they're going to shoot it in space. They're going to, like, Elon Musk is helping him with it. Like, they're going to actually shoot the film in space.
Like, Martian guest stars in there or something.
I hope so.
Well, they just found those microbes on Venus, so.
Of course.
Yeah. They may have done.
It's just female lead.
Do they like Mission Impossible?
So.
I don't know, but they're Scientologists already.
If Tom Cruise is listening and wants to give us a cameo in any film, I'll happily take that one.
Yeah, sure.
I'd quite like to be in Tom Cruise's space movie.
Social in space. Make it work.
Socially distanced.
Sure.
We can get 8 people up there.
Yeah.
Sure.
Well, that's the safest place at the moment, up in the space station.
Yeah.
That's true. It's not very crowded in there.
Yeah.
Do we have any other business? One more
little thing to talk about is that
when
Marius Tinku comes on, how absolutely fuming he is.
Yes! Oh, he goes full fiddum, doesn't he?
Yeah. And he just thinks, like, right, lads, look, they were about 50 points down by the time he'd come on. And he just thinks, like, lads, if I was playing, genuinely, they would be so much closer. They'd be at least, like, 20 points closer to England. Because, firstly, throwing to line. Secondly, the fact that, like, he carries so well and rucks so well. And there's one point where they're having an attack on the England line, which obviously they don't score in the end. But Marius Tinku is that fuming that he's rucking over and he just starts randomly stamping on James Haskell.
He's listened to his podcast ahead of time.
To the point where, the influence he has on this Romanian team is such that Dana Dumbrava, the number 10, also starts stamping on James Haskell, the number 8.
The energies combined and they're just like going at him.
Yeah, it's like
Power Rangers.
My captain's stamping on James Haskell, so I stamp on James Haskell. I don't care that I'm a 10.
I love that Christian Petra, who is the starting captain, is still on when Tinku comes on. Yeah. And there's no question, he is instantly captain. Tinku has taken over now. And so, like, from the next penalty, all game, Petra had been kicking for goal and pointing to the post, and they'd taken shots from literally everyone on the pitch. Whereas the moment Tinku comes on, he goes, well, I can't kick the goal myself, so it's going for the corner. Like, I'm involved in that one. Like, we're going to do that. And just swings completely, and suddenly they're kicking for the corner instead of the post.
I think that's the lineup they actually get.
Yes.
That's their winning, their winning lineup.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
I'm
glad he has such an influence, though, because I feel like it's good to have a zeitgeist, a lightning rod, someone that you all rally around kind of thing. Yeah.
Absolutely. My one other note on the Romanian team is Stefan Siuntu, the winger, we mentioned the Ben Youngs thing, but other than him coming in to hit Ben Youngs, he is not interested in tackling backs. And yet, any time a forward comes near him, he flies in like Faf de Klerk style to try and smash him. So he smashes like I think it's Corbogiero, I think it's Tom Croft, and there's someone else as well. I think it might have been Tom Palmer, I'm not sure. He'll spot a forward in the wide channels, and he'll just fly in and try and just kill them alive. Whereas any time a back came near them, it was like they had the Lurgy and he just let them run past him. Like, he just wasn't interested at all in tackling backs. And I think that's a very endearing quality in a winger.
Complete reverse of
normal. It's a reverse winger, yeah. That ain't good. That ain't right. But,
All right. Shall we Do we have anything else, or should we move on to Man of the Match and Dick of the Day?
We can roll forward.
Okay.
Sweet.
Shall we talk Man of the Match first? Let's go guess first.
Guess first. Okay. Well, I mean, you guys have probably guessed who I think is Man of the Match. I mean, I could throw out a spanner in the works and put someone else, but I think the amount that Chris Ashton wanted this game to do well, and I will stand that he wanted to get an Ash Splash on the papers and all of that.
Of course.
But despite the arrogance, he still, for me, was England's most get-up-and-go-it player. He made that England team start to actually do things that were good. And so I would give him Man of the Match personally.
I'm going to agree with you on that.
You could say he has been England's player in this match.
He has been England's player in this match. Yeah, no, I'm going to agree with you on that. And even before he had the tries, he was still looking to distribute with Foden and link up and stuff. And like, there was so much more to the game than just scoring a hat trick, you know. And it was nice that he managed to clock at 15 points as well. But he was genuinely looking to play quite expansively, and he was just playing a very attractive brand of rugby rather than just doing his usual thing and popping up and finishing tries. So yeah, no, I agree. Chris Ashton's also my man of the match.
Chris Ashton was very almost, he was going to be my man of the match until quite late on in the second half when something clicked for me that I don't think I've ever seen Manu Tuilagi distribute this well. He was running his lines and he was, you know, doing the standard, he was picking that line he always runs. He scores a try, you know, but he was actually passing the ball, which he never normally does. So, like,
certainly
he puts Ben Foden in space. Yeah, exactly. And like, I kind of do want to just give it to Chris Ashton now I've said that. I've got that out of my system. Sure, Chris Ashton, Universal Man of the Match.
Oh,
Chris
wow.
Ashton
nailed
gets
it.
The third. Yeah.
Nice.
Tuilagi, honourable mention for passing a few times and doing some big runs on that.
This isn't undermines.
Yeah, it's Chris Ashton. It's Christopher Ash Tomines. Great. Dick of the Day. Who wants to begin?
I can start if you want.
Yeah, go for it.
As I say, Kazan for that horrendous passing to touch, which, you know, he'd been doing from the warm-up, is one. But I've got to give it to Bogdan Suman for the fact that he could not throw into a line out to save his life. And, like, I know that usually this is quite a light-hearted thing, but it just reached a point where Romania had lost, like, their eighth line out on the try, and it's like, I can't give it to anyone else. This is ridiculous, lads.
100%. So, I mean, I'm going to give my dick of the day to James Haskell.
Nice, good option.
I agree with you completely, but I feel like it's just kicking a man when he's down. Quite rightly, the Romanians were bad, but in that respect, especially at the lineout. But James Haskell, for me, he gave away, I think, two or three penalties minimum on his own. He went backwards off the back of a scrum. Fair play to him, was already going backwards, but he went backwards further.
Sure.
And just generally, I didn't think for a game where he was, in Lawrence Dallaglio's world, going to become the best eight in the world, you know, for that, he wasn't. He didn't look like a superstar on the pitch. He didn't, you know, he was outperformed by Moody. He was outperformed by Tom Croft. And nothing about what he did was very special. So I have to give it to James Haskell.
I'll always approve of you calling James Haskell a dick.
Yes.
So my dick of the day is the one that belongs to Ben Foden.
I mean, it's a hell of a dick.
So I've heard some stories in Tokyo. So I think a few contenders. I mean, I noticed after the match that Florin Vlaku, I think, is an excellent player and was solid. Do you want his tackle stats?
Go on.
One made, five missed.
Excellent.
Which, that's the kind of form you want from your fullback when the opposition breaks.
It was means he was about it? A bit. He was getting about, you know.
I think Christian Petrov continued what kicks a goal, fine. Bogdan Suman. I wanted there to be more England players I could pick from, but I just, I couldn't. I figured it's Bogdan Suman or it's Mike Tindall. His attempts to pass which don't go well, and then him going, you know what, I'm not even going to try anymore.
Yeah, like, Phil Vickery told him not to.
Phil Vickery told me not to, you know, and I love him on MasterChef, so I should listen to him. So, you know, I'm going to go with Mike Tindall because I don't want to pick on Bogdan too much. So we've got a divide there. We've got a split.
Yeah, that's a spread.
All right. Good. Okay. Charlie, Sav, whatever you want to, whoever you are.
Whoever I am. This one.
before we go, anything you want to say, anything you want to plug, anywhere, where can people find you?
You can follow us on Twitter. So Linebreak Rugby on Twitter. We have a website that gets updated with random articles depending on when we care.
You do. Yes. Sorry. Yes. I didn't know that. I have read it. It's good.
Yeah.
Your goal kicking analysis.
Yes. That was updated like in 2017, but I update that sporadically. And I post what the extra fourths look like, because everybody was going the fourths could win the league. So I just posted that. And things like that. And occasionally CC will post on there or Fred will post on there. So it doesn't get updated. But yeah, you can go and visit the website. And we don't podcast, but we have a back catalogue that you can find on any podcasting thing. So just search Linebreak Rugby. Every so often the Six Nation kicks off and everyone listens to our 2017 podcast about the Six Nations. So that is rolling in views and the rest of them don't have anything.
Nice. I mean, you say that like it's mad. We are doing podcasts like the 2011 Rugby World Cup.
That's true. Sorry. Yeah.
Yeah.
But with cutting edge references like Edge of Tomorrow, you know.
That's true.
Just what, 2016?
And speculating about which particular women Ben Foden's got pregnant, you know.
Don't need to speculate on a few.
Yeah. Charlie, thank you again for coming on. I really appreciate that.
It's been good to talk to you for the first time, Will. It's been brilliant. I'm glad we agreed on Man of the Match as well.
Yeah, exactly. And we bonded over something now.
Bullied Robbie into
agreement. Yeah.
I got used to it in school.
We can go back to bullying each other on Twitter now.
If you can't beat him, join him.
Yeah.
It's been a pleasure. Okay. I love it.
No, thank you for doing it. It's been a huge pleasure. I've likewise enjoyed it. Thank you to everyone for listening. Please, if you enjoyed it, continue doing so. Even just for the remainder of this podcast, you know, there's probably seconds left. You can glance at your screen now and see how long's left.
And don't forget, if you're playing rugby anytime soon, which you won't be, if you got a referee there, just give him a nice friendly slap.
Just a love tap right in the stomach. He'll appreciate
Tell him
it.
Not to give up the day job.
Yeah.
Unless he's a full-time referee, in which case, that's actually solid advice. You know, don't give it up. Don't quit your job.
Plug away.
Yes. All right. Well, I hope you enjoyed that. I hope you are having a nice day. You know, you've successfully finished your commute or whatever you're doing. And we'll see you next time for the next match in the Rugby World Cup, which immediately followed this game. And it was between New Zealand and France, when we should, all things being well, be joined by rugby journalist and author of Facing the Hacker, the new book on the All Blacks, Jamie Wall. So I'll see you all then. Charlie, Sav, once again, thank you very much. Will, thank you very much. I'll see you. Goodbye. Good night.
Goodbye. Bye-bye. It's been a pleasure. Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.